Synchronicity.
Right. Two.
One. Wait, are we counting backwards or forwards?
We're counting. We're one, two, three.
One, two, three, clap. Yep. One, two, three, clap.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Just making sure.
Cool.
One, two, three, clap.
You tried to trick me, and I didn't appreciate it. So I was really, quick on the draw, my man. I was quick on the draw.
One more.
Yep. One, okay. Two, three.
Two, three, clap. That was pretty boss.
Nope, it was not boss on my end. You were about a second and a half off. Welcome to the interactive world of Zoom and visual audio conferencing from long distance because the world is falling to pieces. I'm
Rance. Wow, I'm Bob.
We're not dead.
No.
And I'm proud of us for that. Our bodies have continued to function despite the widespread flesh-consuming COVID-19.
Our state's governor decided this past week that they're just going to open a bunch of stuff again. I don't know why that was a smart decision.
Well, we'll see how that works out.
I guess we'll all just die and it's fine.
Numbers will rise. We are all just numbers in life, Bob. We're all just numbers. If there's anything that Doomed to Hell on Earth by Def EW and Brad Lynn Weaver should tell you, it's that we are all just numbers.
Oh, man, are we?
We really are. How has your week been?
So, all right. All right. I mean, aside from that terrifying news, talking about numbers, I actually was watching videos about Doom. The game, the original games, and how the coding works in the game to make things happen.
You were watching the Decino videos?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
It's fascinating.
It really is. His videos, he's one of the few YouTubers whose ability to express the complexity of, like, coding, I get. Yeah. I understand it. His videos are really good. If you get the chance out there, it's just look up the YouTube user Decino, D-E-C-I-N-O.
I'll link it. I'll just link it.
Cool. Yeah, all of his videos really are neat. Always about
not that he's going to get hits from us.
One or two hits. Being us.
Yeah.
But I love how he takes what seems like if you look back at 1993, 1994, the coding, and you think that looking back on it now, it's going to be a fairly clumsy, simplistic process. But how elegant the coding really is, and just how many different contingencies they developed code for. Yeah. I think the one that blew me away is the one I was watching most recently was talking about how sound works and how sound bounces off all the wall separators in a sector. And that walls in Doom in like the CAD mapping program function as sound barriers as well.
Oh, really?
But yes. And so you can also manually cordon off areas where enemies are unable to hear sound, like invisible walls.
Okay.
So that was what helped some enemies become, not move until a specific event happened. Or even if you're running around in Doom and you'll see these tiny, I love it. They're so fun to find. They're these tiny little holes in the wall. It's a place in a corner of a room where the top of the sector has been lowered to just about that much. So it looks like literally a rat hole in the ground because it's connecting that room to an entirely different room where there are surprise monsters waiting to teleport in the minute they hear a gunshot.
What?
Because the game can't hear sounds through walls, they have to literally connect both of these rooms with this tiny little rat hole. It's fascinating.
Wow. I watched his video on how Revenant rockets work and what decides whether they home in on you or not.
I haven't watched that one yet.
What the percentages are. It's stupidly fascinating for numbers, for just a video about math.
I haven't watched that one yet, because that's the most recent one he put up, yeah. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I want to see it, because I hate those Revenant rockets, man. I can't stand walking in circles waiting for them to just hit something else. They go forever.
You know what I hate worse than Revenant rockets? Is when a Revenant shoots a rocket in this book, and they refer to it as a bony.
We're going to get to the strange body shaming qualities of Doom 2 Hell on Earth soon enough. I have a whole segment today that I'd like to call, that I'd like to get into later.
Is it called M'lady?
No, it's not. It's not. It could be. There's so much white knight chauvinism in this book.
And the one conclusion that I came to in reading this week, above anything else, was that these dudes do not understand women and have some real sexual hang-ups.
Yep, because they're specifically at one point talking about the 14-year-old character doing something fantastic, and Fly, our intrepid narrator, talks about how he wondered if sex would be just as exciting for her when it happened. I was like, why?
It was ewy.
I don't know.
So I listed everyone in my notes because I just can't handle it, and it's so weird.
Well, can we start this thing out right? We'll do our intro here and get into it.
Oh yeah, man. Should we? I didn't realize we were here. Are we adding the theme in here?
Yep. Let's do it.
Excuse me, I burped.
Hey, I'm Rance.
I'm Bob.
And this is Quarantine Book Club, and
we're done Doom 2.
Doom 2 Hell on Earth. It's a garbage pile. Not as big a garbage pile as Doom 1 Deep in the Dead.
We made it, though. We made it through the actual canon Doom series.
Approximately 500 pages of Doom brilliance, and I'm not using brilliance in any authentic regard.
I'm so happy that it's over, and yeah, I'm happy that it's over. We'll have a special surprise for everyone at the end of this episode.
That I think that everybody's going to love.
Everybody's going to love, because we're going to love it too.
And you're going to love it as well, because you get to take part in it in your own special way.
Mm-hmm. The celebration that is finishing this book.
I'd like to show you something, though, that I have. My TV just went to sleep, and it is my other source of... You're going to notice that my face is going to fade different colors because I've got the screensaver from the Roku on.
Cool.
And this is how I do atmospheric lighting.
That's fine.
Sometimes I'll look vaguely ill, and other times I'll look like a flower, and then other times I'm going to look like soft twilight light is shining on my face.
I bought some color-changing lights.
Yeah,
to do some stuff for myself, except that they're smart lights, and I can't get them hooked into my network because my network doesn't like any of the smart items that I buy because I'm on Comcast.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. And I use the base router that they give us.
So that route... What did you get? What lights did you get?
I don't know. I bought two smart bulbs from Amazon.
So I'm going to tell you what.
Yeah.
And you're going to not like this. You got to go with them Hue lights.
I know, Phillips, dude. Those Hue lights are so expensive for something that I'm putting here that only gets used to shine on my face here or to shine on my face here.
But let me tell you, this is why they're so good, is because it bypasses all that garbage with the router because it has its own hub. You buy a separate hub. And so that hub connects directly into your router, and then all your lights just connect to that hub. So, like, when I'm playing video games, I've got behind me, like, behind my screen, I've got lights that, like, know what's on the screen, and it does the bias lighting, and, like, in here, like, I can lower things to a more appropriate tone, or... Okay, let me just show you the cool thing that I got. So...
Yeah, I started losing interest.
Yes, so I received a package from a friend of mine. So I got a shirt that sort of fits the content of our podcast, but I have to see if I can hang it out here.
It says, Lashiel-infused Hellfire Fuego.
Yep. So
it is a Dresden Files shirt.
It is. So my friend Annie, she's got a website. It's anniemiles.com. She is an artist and a digital designer, digital artist, graphical designer. I don't know what the right term to use for it. And she placed this year in the yearly Dresden Files art contest. So you can literally go to the website, and her art is right up there, like on the Jim Butcher website, as one of the official placers. And
cool.
I thought it was really cool, and she sent me a copy of the shirt just because.
Oh, that's neat.
So I'm really happy. It fits really well. I'm not wearing it now right now because I didn't want to be a weird guy who was like, check out my shirt like that. Like, I don't know. That feels weird to me.
Check out my shirt.
Check out my
Quarks bar shirt.
So that was really cool. It's already become one of my new favorite shirts because
congratulations, Annie.
Not enough. Yeah. No, seriously. Congratulations. That is super cool. I think it's neat to know that, you know, it's neat to see someone get recognized for their art and to see it appreciated like that. So that was cool. It made my week. Anything going on with you? Otherwise, before we jump into this, hell on pages, hell on paper. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Seagram's.
Wait, is that a fruit punch or is that an actual drink?
It's a lemon, strawberry, watermelon, guava. I mean, it's an alcoholic drink.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
It's a fruit soda with alcohol in it, basically. I love beer, don't get me wrong, but I have, during quarantine, been drinking a lot of beer, and some days I just kind of go, hey, I want a thing that does not taste like beer.
Yep. Why do you think I've got two beers here with me tonight rather than just one for a one-hour podcast?
My tolerance has shot through the roof.
Me too.
And I don't feel anything anymore because I've been drinking so much.
During
this quarantine.
We haven't become alcoholics though. Okay, we haven't gotten that far yet. So please don't send help.
Because I have days where I don't drink at all.
Right, right.
It's just when I do decide to drink, I'm.
I also
drinking
have days
more.
Where I don't cry, which is really awesome.
Is it? I feel like
yeah, for me
I feel like a good cry.
Speaking
is just
of which,
important.
I should have taken my antidepressant on video tonight because I forgot
Cheers.
To take it this morning. So.
Oh, no. Did you take it before we started, at least?
No, I'll get it afterwards. It's fine.
Oh, man.
It stays in my system for long enough and keeps me sort of not sad. So now you know.
It's going to make you cry.
All right, let's talk about this thing. I got so much to say, and I'm afraid that we're going to run out of time, and we're going to do what we usually do, which is we're going to be superficial about the whole thing. But you know what? This book is superficial and super terrible.
Well, we're going to start by doing this. I'm going to set a stopwatch. I want you to start. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to go as far as you can explaining the plot of the story from where we start at chapter 17.
Great.
Which the words that start at chapter 17 are the rockets blew through the front of the trailer and the back of the cab. So that's where we're starting. I'm going to give you 30 seconds. When that 30 seconds runs out, I'm going to pick up from you and keep going. And we're going to see if we can get it in a minute. If not, we'll just go back and forth. And
sounds good.
We'll actually give the plot of the book as we see it.
I dig it. Ready?
Ready? Go.
All right, so some stuff happens. The gang fights the Revenant, right? And then they get shuffled onto, later on, they get shuffled onto the world's worst, like, Holocaust amusement park ride. And they get put into a train with a bunch of zombies while they're doing their best to play dead in the strangest, most peculiarly ineffective way possible. We won't get into that now. And then they find on the train, a mummified person.
Stop. 30 seconds are up. Okay. My turn to go 30 seconds. I'll stop myself because I'm looking, unless you want to take a timer.
I got you. I got you. Let me hit your timer up here really quick. I'm ready.
Anytime you're ready, you just give me a go. So before they get on the train, Arlene and Albert have to go through a grocery store and get sour lemons so they can cover themselves with sour lemons so that they can blend in with the zombies. So they go through a whole kind of like pre-Walking Dead, Walking Dead type situation. So they get on the train, they find this mommy guy. Jill has to go stupidly and knock a spider mastermind off of the train by wrapping a grappling hook around his leg. So they do that, and then they get the mummy guy and take him back to another train car.
Stop. Okay. You let me know when to go.
Okay. I had to go backwards.
That's okay. Because I didn't, yeah.
And go.
What really stood out to me, though, is while they were on the train, the steam demon or cyber demon and the spider mastermind began killing each other because they were offended at one another for various reasons. And so that's just like level 20 of Doom 2. Gotcha. Where you have to make the two fight each other. So Fly and Arlene thought that was great. They get off the train and then they have to go into the city with the mummy boy who they want to hack into his brain. Right? They want to hack into his brain and Jill is a computer. start.
And did any when they so they go into this meth den in order to hack this guy's brain with these two former scientists who are making the juice that turns people into zombies. But while they're there, they send Arlene and Albert to a Radio Shack because they're always going on shopping
or a CompUSA.
Yes, either one, because this is the 90s. They get the cables, come back, decide that they don't want to do it with each other, even though they do.
And stop.
Because that's a big... All right, ready?
Yep.
Go.
And they have this long conversation where they talk about the morals and the moral implications of having sex before marriage. We find out that Albert's wife is dead or something like that. I don't even remember that. We find out that Albert has a dead wife or something and that he doesn't like to have sex because it's the thought that is the sin and not necessarily the action. And that's weird because all of a sudden we're talking about this Mormon guy having the sex and not demons. So then they also find out through Ken's brain.
Stop. Are you ready for me?
Go.
They find out through Ken's brain that they can actually control different parts of the alien technology. I don't know how it works because they never really explain it correctly. They look at him sort of, they mention that he's sort of like a monitor for the 30 seconds, sorry?
No. Oh. Keep going.
And, but so anyway, this place gets attacked by what is a little, the demons come in, they discover that this place isn't really a crack den, and that they're down in the basement, so they kill the people upstairs, and they shoot an alien down.
Okay, they shoot an alien downstairs, just so happens to be an arch vial. But then they say, then Fly says, when they see the alien, I wonder if it's one, because they find out through Ken's brain that they've hacked into that these aliens, they are aliens, not demons. And they find out that they're aliens who are simply taking the form of human demons, that they have gone to all of these different worlds and consumed and enslaved their peoples. And that Earth is the only one, Earth is the next one. So they fight an arch vial.
They fight an arch vial, which is nothing like an arch vial. But before that, they've also discovered Clydes. They just named them Clydes. Clydes are former human commandos that are made another Doom enemy. They start taking the Doom 2 enemies and then just kind of screwing them up. Like, the arch vial is like, it's like the size of a baby, they said. It's tiny. But so anyway, they escape this basement.
Did I miss the weird baby part?
Yep, they escape this basement.
Can we go back and look at that at some point?
The tunnel blows up, absolutely. The tunnel blows up. They escape, and they run through the city from all these guys, and I think get them to fight each other again, because that's their favorite tactic.
Stop.
Oh, no, I remember how they do it. Sorry.
Okay, yeah, Crossfire. I don't remember how they do it, by the way. I'm honestly blanking entirely on it, so I'm going to skip right past it. You can jump back to it later. And so they have to. They find out that they have to take down the neural net, like the enemy's neural net. But they have to do so when they do so, they have to. There's an energy field that's also surrounding the city, and they have to go on top of the Disney Tower to take down the force field.
Stop. Well, they get on a plane. They go to LAX. They just hump this body guy of a guy to LAX. They throw him. They get onto a plane by covering themselves with more rotten sour lemons. They get on this plane. They hijack this plane. Albert, just like in the last book, one of their new recruits takes a ball of slime, a fire slime, to the face from one of the imps. Fly goes back into berserker mode, kills the imp, and they discover they're gonna have to jump out of the plane.
The Disney building, right? So they separate Arlene and Jill. Now, Jill is flying the plane because she's a hacker. She hacks into it, and she does flying with it. That's fine. Whatever. It's the most believable part of this bullshit book. So then she's flying. They get down on the Disney building, and then they have to drop the force field, which is funny enough, which sounds a lot like the end of Circle of Doom or O of Destruction, level 11 of Doom 2, where they have to drop the force field down to let off all of the humans into space so the demons don't consume.
Stop. It does. That level in Doom 2. Yeah. So they go and they climb to the top of this Disney Tower. Basically, we have a short retelling of almost all of Doom 1. They kill a pumpkin at one point. They make a note of saying that, but otherwise they're just like, oh, we're killing enemies.
So I shot it. It shot me. It shot ball lightning.
They get up to the top, and how do they stop this force field, Fly cuts the power cord. He cuts the power cord with a knife. All of the bad guys are outside the door, and Arlene, once again, at the end of the book, says, wait, I know how to get us down.
And to Hawaii. And she says specifically, I want to stop our 30-second recaps right now. She says,
so that's the basic plot of the end, the second half of Doom 2.
If you thought it sounded like a complete clusterfuck, you're right. Because no part of this is remotely functional as a plot that hits the usual, like, plot things, right? It's not good.
So dumb.
It's so much better than Knee Deep in the Dead, but in it, it also goes almost towards this strange level of satire. At the end, I'm going to read you guys the last series of lines from the books because it's very important to me. So the monsters are about to come into the Disney Tower. They think that they're gonna perish. And Arlene says, she faced me again. Fly says, she faced me again wearing a big, crafty Arlene Sanders smile. What is that even? Like, what's it? Can you do your best Arlene Sanders smile? Like, what is it? You're not going to believe this, Fly Taggart, but I think I have it. I know how to get us down and get us to Hawaii to join Albert. And Jill, I added. I nodded back, convinced she'd finally cracked. Great idea, Arlene. We could use a vacation from all this pressure. You don't believe me. You're right. I don't believe you. Arlene smiled slyly. She was using the early worm that got the bird smile. Flynn Taggart, bring me some duct tape from the toolbox, an armload of computer switch wiring, and the biggest goddamn boot you can find. Okay, so how do you think they're going to get out of this? I want to ask that first.
Sorry, I'm wiping spit off my
face. I spit on my screen, too. I was very angry.
I drooled on myself while I was making an Arlene Sanders smile, and it ran all down my chin and onto my chair.
So here they are. Let's set the scene, right? They're on the top of the Disney Tower. Demons or aliens are outside, right?
Yeah.
And they're about to come in, Albert and Jill manage to fly away after doing the hack thing, after doing, like, they fly to Hawaii because they find out that Hawaii is, like, the new last bastion of humanity. Right. And so they're flying.
It's a base. There's a base there. Yeah,
they're flying to Hawaii, and get me if I'm wrong, Hawaii is the place where they're still going to set up, like, a counter strike against the aliens. So
I got to bring some info there to do a thing.
Jill and Albert leave on that.
Right.
Fly and Arlene are stuck in there. The demons are going to come get them. She says, give me some wire. Give me a boot. And give me some duct tape. How are they going to get down, man? Do you think they're
going to
get down?
She's going to tie some cables to this boot. She's going to throw it up over an antenna aerial. And like a grappling hook, and they're going to climb down the side of the Disney Tower using these cables.
Why the boot, though?
Because they need something that weighs something. Because they don't want to leave it in the room, otherwise the demons will come in the room and be able to cut it off. And then they'll fall to their deaths.
Okay.
So she's thinking ahead.
Yeah.
One thing they actually normally don't do in this book, she's thinking ahead, and they're gonna throw it out outside.
They never think ahead. These are some of the dumbest brick characters I've ever met. Except maybe Jill. Who?
We gotta... I don't like Jill either. Jill sucks too.
She does suck. She does suck.
They all suck. I don't like any of them.
But I don't think you're wrong. I think... I'm almost betting on her pulling a Robert Langdon and finding a way to make them a parachute. I don't know how the boot factors into that. And they ride the boot, but I want them to
make parachutes. She just wants to throw it at somebody as they fly out the window. Because in classic Arlene A.S. Sanders smile.
With a smile.
Oh, man. Do you want to go back to the actual beginning of the reading? And we'll work our way through some of the problem points in
this
book.
Yeah, there's a lot. I have a ton of problem mm-hmm. points, and I'm afraid that we're going to go over our time allotment as usual.
We'll try to blast through it as quick as possible. I don't even know how long we're... Well, we're only not even 25 minutes in yet.
Cool.
So
you step it up, start.
Okay.
I don't know if we need to go chapter by chapter, but more or less things that are standing out to you as, like, really remarkably stupid moments in the book or mm-hmm. things that you just had a thought about as you were going through. I'm not worried about recapping, like, the individual details, because
no,
who cares?
No, of course.
I want to forget this book the way I forgot about it since I've read it since seventh grade, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I wish I can't wait till this is done, and I can just forget about it. Like,
I've already written all over my book, because I just want to discard it when we're done.
Are you going to throw it in the trash when we're done?
I actually might.
That is so awesome.
I love Doom stuff. I don't know if these books are surviving me.
The whole book is written like you gave a showrunner a failed pilot, and then they came back twice as hard the next episode and wrote, like, a second pilot. And that's what, like, you know, there's shows that have pilots and they fail and they don't get picked up. But what if that pilot that was failed, the guy just went, you know what? I know why it failed. I'm going to make a second episode that's going to be better. It's like season two of Buffy. Because season one is apparently such trash.
It's garbage.
And then everybody says that you get to season two of Buffy, and it's like, it's slightly better. But I tried that whole skip season one thing.
It didn't work?
And it didn't work. I was like, no, this is still garbage, and I don't like it. And it could be that Joss Whedon was a philandering monster. That could be part of the reason that it wasn't good.
Oh, I just... totally random.
Go for it.
I just figured out why you thought it looked like a baby.
Why? Why the arch vial looks like a baby?
Yes, this has been. I got to be honest with you. I've only heard about half of anything you've said since you mentioned it looks like a baby. Because I have been obsessing over when did Bob think the arch vial looked like a baby? Now, I know I'm going into this with all of my Doom knowledge as it exists now, and I know what the arch vial looks like, right? It's lanky, it's tall. It claps its hands together and creates fire, right?
Yes, yes.
It brings zombies back from the dead or creatures back
from
the dead.
What does he call it in this? A flame boy or a hot shot?
hot shot. No, Arlene names it a fire eater.
Oh, right.
And then he says afterwards, he's
that's
like,
a good name.
That's the best name she's come up with in a while.
What is this?
He doesn't fucking eat fire.
He doesn't eat fire. It makes fire.
It's like the same phrase like Death Eaters. Like Death Eaters always bothered me in the Harry Potter series because it's not like they're just scooping death into their mouth. Like, this is good death, right? It's a stupid name. Anything with eater in it, if you're not actively eating, is a stupid name.
What about a Sin Eater?
No, I was about to say, exception to that, Sin Eater. Well, okay. That also is like in various like tribal cultures, right? But also like Nightwolf from Mortal Kombat is my really own exposure to it. Sorry, I'm white. But even they use it right because he eats sins.
Yes.
He consumes the sins or like takes on the sins of others.
He takes them in instead of putting it out.
Right, which is what our fire eater does. He puts it out. Like he shoots fire out. Anyway, I would venture it's not a baby.
Okay.
It's just the bad writing that made you think it's a baby.
I guess so, because it sounded like it was a tiny little beb. He said, this tiny little baby came after me and was made of fire.
We froze. I was a statue holding up a bookshelf. Albert stood nearby, holding the naked Ken in the fireman's carry. Jill was part of that tableau, holding her Comp Mac Ultra Micro, still jacked into Ken. And Arlene was on the other side of the basement room in the gloom. Of the five of us, Ken did the best job of playing dead. But he had an unfair advantage. A thing dropped down from the open trap. This baby looked vaguely humanoid. Oh, they were keeping at it, but definitely alien. The yellow-white naked body maintained the hell motif so popular with the invaders. No obvious genitalia. I thought you said
this baby, not this baby. You know,
right.
like
it's not like said, this baby. Like this baby was hot. This baby was dangerous.
Not like
right?
Oh, this little baby.
This baby fell down.
He's like, hey, baby, like, or like, wow. That baby is smoking.
So he was using it as like an address, right?
I
like
thought
this baby,
they literally dropped a baby down.
This baby dropped down. Like, no. So they.
I was imagining it like the size of a toddler.
No, and
the whole
they
time
don't...
I'm reading it.
I don't think they ever really talk about. They don't really talk about how tall it is, but they're using this baby as in like this baby was
no,
mean.
No, I'm sorry. The rest of this entire
this
series
is
they're
baby
sized.
I would like to also talk about in regards to this before we dump this part of it. He says in here, Fly says that he had no desire to become Marine Flambé. Really loving these references back to the old Doom 2 manual when they said in Doom 2 manual that the arch file could turn you into Marine Flambé. the fact that I know this is a real problem.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what is Arlene used to kill the Fire Eater? The
fire extinguisher. Out of all of the Doom weapons we can pick, we got a fire extinguisher.
But then they used that in... They did make it into a Doom weapon, though.
Did they?
In Doom RPG, you get a fire extinguisher.
The I don't Doom remember series. That.
Man, the Doom series has unfortunately latched itself
to this trash to book. Yeah.
In Doom 3, the imps, the bonies, or the spinies, they spit into their palm to throw the fire.
Yeah.
Which is a cool detail in the game. That's what they do in the books. They spit in their palm, they throw it. And they do it in the game. I mean, I don't know. I just like, why are they just attaching their ideas to these books? I don't know.
Do you want to talk about some real problems? Let's go back to, what chapter is this? Let's go back to chapter 18, okay?
Is this the chapter where both the narration and the characters are terribly culturally insensitive,
or is this throughout the
rest of the book?
This is the chapter where we find out that Arlene's hot for guys.
Cool.
Arlene's hot for dudes, but we find out what actually happened with her brother, and that was that he attempted to sexually assault her, but she kicked his ass.
Cool.
Also, one of the things we're talking about theater boys here, one of the things that I actually found really offensive.
I'm going to need you to really bone up on them theater boy skills for later, my friend.
I'm terrible as a theater boy. I'm going to fail this quiz so hard. But what I'm not going to fail is telling you about how Arlene's hot brother got all of the gay theater boys came on to him because he worked in the theater. And they're so aggressively gay that they came on to him and they turned him into a rapist. Because
wow.
He couldn't handle how.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Did I just go over this?
Oh, man.
Did my brain shut it out? I mean, I admit I'm reading a lot of this book in like paragraph bursts where I'm just ripping through it.
Yep. No.
What?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ew.
Let me look. Let me see if I can find the exact text that she's talking about. But it's bad and it's insulting.
God, I can't wait to find it.
And her brother's name, she calls him Buddy. He was actually named Ambrose. Okay, it got worse. A lot of the older guys in the theater, he did stage crew stuff for the Spacelings. They kind of came on to him. Real aggressive gay stuff. Sometimes the theater can get like that. And anybody who says it never did... anybody who says it can't never did theater in L.A. or New York.
Can we please name this? Can we please name this episode "Real Aggressive Gay Stuff"? I like that we create the names of the episodes, and that one won't be nearly as problematic as the last one. R.I.P.
No.
Real aggressive. Can we call it "Real Aggressive Gay Stuff"? Please.
Real aggressive gay stuff. Sometimes the theater can get like that. Wow. Thanks. Thanks, man.
Sometimes it's just this, I'm gays at the theater. Like, you're going to go into a theater, you're going to get gay. It's going to happen.
Man,
I don't even remember this. I'm trying to find it. Like, I wish I could say that in my printed copy of the book, it wasn't there.
let me see. It's on, in my book,
mm-hmm.
It's on page 132.
This is going to be so cool. 132. real aggressive gay stuff. I can't get over that.
So Arlene's brother moves to Salt Lake City after this and becomes a Mormon or whatever. So she doesn't like Mormons, which is really weird because guess what? Later on, she's going to get attracted to Albert. Of course, who are we going to put her with? A Mormon. Because she doesn't like Mormons.
God, I hate this page so much. I hate this page so much. Real aggressive. Sometimes the theater can get like that.
It's the worst. Like, it's a terrible blanket statement.
Well, that goes. That is a.
Which is what they're really good at in this.
Oh, yeah, they are. And there are a number. That's so funny because that completes the circle for me. Because I have in here a number of examples of just cultural and, like, human insensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have anything that was directly in relations to, like, homosexuality or same-sex marriage or anything like that.
Well, there you go.
But now we got it. We start off. That's way earlier than all the other instances I find.
Also,
the theater can get like that, man.
So, oh, the theater can get like that. So they go, okay, so we do this. They go to the grocery store.
Do you think Defeat of Pew would be really upset if it was like really aggressive gay stuff, but also between brothers?
That's really aggressive, man. It's too aggressive.
Can you put it?
I'm so hyped today. I know I'm really loud, and I'm sorry.
When I wink like this,
mm-hmm.
Can you put a little
ting
in there?
Yeah, I'll try my best.
So, like every time in this episode, I'm not going to do a lot more winking, but every time in this episode when I wink, I go.
Okay, I'll see if I can.
But I can't. But this time I can't do it with the noise though, because you have to actually put the noise in there. You ready? This is a wink.
Give me a.
No, because then it's going to cover up the when you make the little bing bing. It's going to cover that up.
Don't worry about it. Just do it. Thanks.
Gotcha.
Got it.
Real aggressive gay stuff right there. Like, that phrase itself is so bad.
Yeah. I know that. I get it. We were in the 90s where we weren't as sensitive or understanding or knowledgeable about the world of, you know,
of anything?
Of
anything?
Yes, anything.
It's not a straight white dude? This part.
Hey, I like that the only, can we talk about how the only character of color in the whole book is a Ken Mummy Man?
No, Bob.
Don't worry about it. We're going to look at his dick later.
There's two characters of color in this book.
Oh,
we're about to talk about the other one.
I don't even remember the other one.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't, because it's one of the other circles. It's maybe just as, like, maybe your brain wiped it out because it's just as bad a moment of, like, insensitivity as the real aggressive gay stuff. Okay. So they actually, before we get there, I found my line for this book, by the way.
In
chapter 25, we're talking more and more about Albert,
okay,
and Arlene.
Yes,
Bob, can you tell me? I don't know if you remember exactly how Arlene describes her own feelings for Albert.
I gotta get there. Please just
because I have it right here. If you need it,
no, I want to be. I know that it's this. It's the same.
It's right next to the real.
I was falling for Albert.
Yeah, I was falling for Albert.
Crazy, bugging. Retarded.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Falling for Albert. Poo! Crazy fucking retarded. Just because what am I supposed to do but love this Mormon, man?
God.
Crazy fucking retarded. Like, you put. Bugging is this weird word that, like, they use the word dweeb a lot in this book as well.
This is one of the worst chapters in the whole book. This chapter is a chapter where they just talk about sex stuff so they can talk about sex stuff. They talk about glory holes and sex cages and prostitutes, and they're just like,
we're talking about sex stuff in this part of the book. Just
this is like
this gets you to talk about sexy stuff with us. Me, Daffy W, and my friend Brad Linneweaver, who want to talk to you about glory holes. Oh, wait, what happens if a girl can't use a glory hole? I guess she could be on the other side of it. You know how that works. You Mormon?
Who's that? You can help me with this because I can't remember his name. Who's the comic book artist who made like The Boys and stuff like that?
Garth Ennis or
Garth Ennis. Thank you. Garth Ennis.
The actual writer, Garth Ennis.
Yeah, Garth Ennis. So the problem with Garth Ennis as a comic book artist and writer is that, like, he's one of these guys who thinks that to ramp something up into adulthood, like to separate. These are the things for children, and these are the things for adults, that you have to ramp it up with rampant references to, like, alter sexuality and, like, strange sexual stuff.
Quote,
and, like, drug use.
Unquote.
Yes. Let's shoot heroin into our buttholes, and then we're going to put hamsters in our rear end. Like, to me, reading Garth Ennis isn't reading an adult comic book. It's reading a superiorly juvenile thing that wants to be adult, because I think we've forgotten, especially in the 90s, that being an adult, you didn't mean you had to embrace these things. You didn't have to talk about glory holes the way they do in this.
Oh, they love talking about
it. But they were like, let's... Remember those things? You never used a glory hole before? Arlene says to Albert, you never used a glory hole?
Yo, you're in the Marines. You never have weird rampant sexual activity before? What? That sounds dumb. What are you, were you, you know, really some really aggressive gay stuff.
She says to him, you mean you're a virgin? He tilted his head to the side. Was that a yes? But you're a Marine, I howled in amazement. Like, did you know in boot camp, you have to have sex?
Neat.
Like, that's a thing. Like, you go to
it's a rite of passage. Paris Island,
you gotta have sex.
Oh, man.
So that sucks. So they use the R word, which we don't like.
No, it's ableist. It's a big ableist sentence where she says, crazy, buggin', retarded.
Like, why are you gonna...
I feel like buggin's probably ableist in there somewhere, too.
Who even knows? I'm buggin' out!
It's 2020. We don't use the word. And yes, I know this was written in 96 or whatever. But now, we don't use the word crazy, and we don't use the word retarded.
So... That's and then she quotes a German philosopher just casually at the end of the chapter.
To quote
everybody's third favorite weird German philosopher, Oswald Spengler. Did you just open up like Uncle John's bathroom reader and like put your finger down on a page like, I'm gonna put that in my Doom book?
And these are the things that they use to attempt to make each character's voice different in the book. But they don't do a good job of it. When I'm reading Jill, I don't hear a character that's different from Fly. I hear,
no.
except for the fact that they just take her and turn her into a bad version of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, where everything's radical and awesome, and she's so extreme riding on a cool hoverboard bike. Because it's
Cowabunga!
The future.
Cowabunga!
She probably hacked that bike. There's no bike in the book. I just made it up, okay? See, I make stuff up, too, just like you, Daffodil, at Pugh and Bradlin and Weaver. Just making stuff up in the Doom universe.
They fight a Mancubus at one point, which, if you've played the game, is a really big, like, grossly, like, obese and horrendous-looking demon. However, what's the word they use to call it? It's called a fatty.
Fatty. It's just a fatty.
It's called a fatty. You got bonies, you got fatties, you got spinies.
Well, they don't ever actually get to officially naming it, because at one point, Flynn says, I'm going to let Jill name it, but then he just sort of goes, I forgot about that. Guess we'll just keep calling her a fatty.
Just call it a fatty.
Because we never officially named it.
Let's put it on Arlene's shoulder. She'll name it something cool like Fire Eater.
Also, so in chapter...
I've been having this problem, man. I got this problem.
Is it that this...
With names. Because I've been playing... Let me be honest with you. You know this, but it's not a thing that I like to admit, like, all around the world. You know, like, I spend a lot of time, an unfortunate amount of time, having a good time playing World of Warcraft. I know it ruined your last marriage, man.
That was a cool part. That was actually the coolest part of a whole marriage.
It was. But there's this character you fight at one point, and he's a big fireball named Lord Overheat. And I'm like, y'all were just fucking on vacation when you named this. You couldn't name him Lord Overheat.
They call him Lord Boney.
I got a basic fire reference name, Lord Overheat. And I also, the other day, like, encountered somebody named Char the Burning. And I was like, what? Why? Like, you're
this a sounds like the leader of a bad death metal band.
My name's Char the Burning. Lord Overheat.
You think he's gonna eat his friend's brains?
Going to be a fire eater. Like, what you mean? Like, dead. Like dead?
Yeah,
dead.
So there's a part in this chapter where we got into some of our libertarian stuff.
I have it circled.
Is it the part that starts with "Is everyone finished"?
Yes. Look.
Yep.
I have it circled.
Read it. Please read it for me.
Okay. So we have to talk about what they're doing. They're having a philosophy, a philosophical discussion.
Well, are we going to shoot or not?
Yeah.
Like going through town, are we going to shoot at bad guys or are we not going to shoot at bad guys?
Well, because what they're finding out now is that they fight the Clyde, right? Which I love that when Arlene names it Clyde, Fly's like... Huh? Why would you call it a Clyde? We all know why she's calling it a Clyde, because we're not idiots and he's got a machine gun. Why is he calling it a Clyde? Because Clyde Barrow, right? I was in seventh grade and I knew that, right?
I was thinking of Pac-Man.
It's because in one video game book, you get another video game reference.
Exactly. There's one little bad guy in Pac-Man who's not, it doesn't end with Inky.
That would be clever, though, right? For her to be like, no, it was the guy in Pac-Man. Who's Clyde Barrow? I'd have been like, nice, nice. They name him Clyde, and they're having this philosophical debate of like, okay, what do we do with humans now? Because we find out that there are some humans that are in service of these aliens. Are they genetically created? Are they under mind control? Or are they doing this willingly? And so they have a problem with, like, do we kill the humans? Do we not kill the humans? Like, what do we do? Now the things are muddy and strange because we're not just shooting people who things that don't look like us. So anyway, they're talking about finding a way to get through a situation without firing their guns, like you said. I had some advice that nobody wanted to hear. Well, Fly's primary directive is not to use firearms unless absolutely necessary. Jill was the first critic. But Fly, it's not like they're human. Using martial arts might only entertain them, Arlene added. I'm not even sure a shiv would bother them, assuming you can find their ribs to stick it between. Is everyone finished? I asked, a bit impatiently. Look, I'm not getting all liberal. I mean, the wrong noise at the wrong moment could bring down a horde on our heads. What?
Not getting all liberal on you here. Don't worry about Snowflake.
Don't worry about that. I still love guns. I still love to shoot things.
I'm a libertarian. I'm not liberal. I'm a libertarian.
I'm not liberal. I'm not a conservative. I'm a libertarian. I believe freedom for all things. Also, I use guns whenever I want to. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Yeah,
no
Fly Tagger. Maybe me approaching the situation like a peacefully intelligent, rational person. Maybe I'm not really going to do that. I'm still going to use my gun at some point. Maybe I'm getting a liberal.
Yeah, he's getting a little bit hippie liberal. Hippie punk,
he's just a hippie punk snot flying on belladonna, crazy bugging.
You think he's crazy bugging, hippie punk snot flying on liberal left-wing propaganda?
Really aggressive gay stuff. Can I show you what just happened with my book, and I'm really happy about it?
It just fell apart.
The thing came apart.
Did you hear it go...
Yeah, glue it back together like my soul after reading this book.
Oh, God damn it.
We get to the next chapter...
No, okay, wait.
Where they get to the meth lab.
Yes, they get to the meth lab. This is where I need to go back to the cultural insensitivity.
Because we get into more weird and sensitive stuff. Like,
okay, ready?
And Albert, let me just read, can I read this part that bothers me? As Albert and Arlene continued unwrapping, because they're unwrapping Ken, the mummy man who is
brain computer that Jill needs to hack.
As Albert and Arlene continued unwrapping, Jill stepped back. The man wasn't wearing anything but the quickly unwinding bandages. As they started unwrapping below the waist, our 14-year-old Hellion got embarrassed. Oceans of gore she could take without batting an eyelash, but a nude young man was enough to make her blush. I was deeply amused and grateful I woke up in time for the entertainment. Jill's reaction, I mean, not the guy, because Lord forbid somebody thinks I'm gay. The more nonchalant she tried to be, the more fun I had watching. She actually turned fire engine red, her normally pale cheeks matching her hair. I noticed Arlene noticing me, noticing Jill. Ah, women. Am I right? Ladies,
just
women.
Just girls.
Just girls looking at penises.
Just girls doing girl stuff.
I'm rapping big old dongles.
Oh my gosh. Check it out.
Check out, I've never seen a penis before, but...
I'm not a penis.
Why
but,
is... I don't... Is this going back to the introduction in the first book that we talked about all of that weird Nambla stuff? Because there's a lot of weird stuff relating to Jill and her sexuality as a teenager. And
bothersome. You're right. Actually, I totally forgot about that because there's a point at which... When she successfully hacks into Ken's brain.
Oh, yeah. Oh, don't worry about it.
She stands up, right? She then said the magic words, yes, 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 and got up to pump her arm and strut like a guy. I doubt that sex will ever give her that much excitement.
How do you know? How do you know, Fly? You know, because are you planning on giving it to her?
So
gross.
Fly is not only like...
Don't worry, later on in this book, I talk about how I'm sad I can't say that I'm her daddy.
They go up to... Yeah, that's a weird
thing.
She's
my daughter. She's my daughter.
Baby, I love you, but I ain't gonna hang out next to your body.
That's my song that I made for you.
Baby, I love you. I'm gonna teach you how to kill, but I ain't gonna see you unclothed. Baby, I love you. I'm just gonna think about you having sex in the future, but I ain't gonna do it with you. You might have a crush on me, and when you strangely become a post-adolescent, and you're still gonna have a crush on me, but we ain't gonna do it.
Bro, there's a part where they're in Jill's head when she's doing the whole I'm gonna kill the spider mastermind thing.
Yes.
Where she says, where she thinks about what it would have been like if Fly had kissed her.
If I had kissed her, it would have been mediocre at best, because I just want Arlene Sanders claws.
I don't know why all of a sudden he sounds like that in my head. Like, what is with everything? Now, this book has all gotten, like, weird. Everything has this sexual bent to it.
Don't worry, because like. next we get to an Albert chapter.
Oh, but we can't get to there yet, because we still got to hit this mode of insensitivity.
Please.
For one, Fly is a super grandpa. They're going into this meth lab where they meet. We haven't even talked about the guys who cook meth drugs, whatever.
Because they're nothing. They're not important. They die immediately.
They're totally unimportant.
It's a cool idea. It's like every once in a while they have these little interesting bits. That could be great, like, if this wasn't a Doom book.
And like these things that if you saw them placed in a Philip K. Dick book or like a William Gibson book would be these hints of philosophical human reflection about like what it means to be human and do we have a certain responsibility to others that those authors would approach and apply in, you know, that Philip K. Dick would have applied or that William Gibson could apply in really like amazing ways. But instead, we just gloss right over the fact that there are these two, like, CIA and military chemists who are creating for the demons their mind-altering drugs to help keep humans zombified. So, like, does that mean that humans are zombies? I don't know. Who cares? Because we're not here to talk about
it's
philosophy.
It's just trash.
Right? So they go up to the house where they're working out of, and it says the perfect touch.
Excuse me.
The final that was cool. The final perfect touch was a monotonous cacophony of dumbass psycho-metal music blaring through the thin walls. In 1995, they must have predicted that Mick Gordon was going to create the soundtrack. Thanks for being a grandpa, Flynn.
Do you think they were just listening to some Rammstein?
They might have been. So then they say it was like stepping back into time to the it was like stepping back in time to the late 20th century when post-punks, headbangers, carpetbangers, and other flotsam of adolescent rage had their 15 minutes.
Carpetbangers?
What the f*** is a carpetbanger?
I don't know.
I looked it up. There is nothing online about carpetbangers.
Because they made it up. It's made up.
I was a headbanger and a carpetbanger and some post-punk.
What's that like he's aware enough to call something post-punk?
I knew what post-punk was back in the day, but I don't know what a carpetbanger is.
Well, then, here we go. We're getting back into Fly's continued judgment, and here's the problem. And I'm hoping that when I read this aloud, like you did with the part where they're talking about aggressive gay stuff, that maybe this rings just as problematic to you.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm so ready.
They open the door. There were two young men standing in the doorway. One was blonde. The other was darker, black-haired, and possibly Hispanic. Rocco and Paco, for the moment.
What?
He names them.
How did I miss that? How did I miss Rocco and Paco?
He names them in his head, and he's like, "This one looks Hispanic. It must be Paco." Let me just apply the most
doesn't matter
stereotypical. They just get wiped out.
At this point in the future, it doesn't even matter because there's a wall between here and Mexico, so there wouldn't be any bros in the United States named Paco. You know why? Because Donald Trump would kick them all out.
It's just got a wall here. Pacos, I don't want you here. Pacos, just like I don't want any of that aggressively gay stuff. And if you're both of those things at once, if you're Paco and you're aggressively gay, you better get out of here.
God,
I don't
want
to touch you.
I just like,
man, that's so racist.
He immediately
so racist.
Goes like, "What's the first Hispanic name?" I guess I'll just call him Paco. Like, he couldn't have just gone with another name? Like, I don't know, dude one and dude two.
My brain hurts. I know Tweedledum and Tweedledee.
And Paco. Because here's
Laurel
the problem.
Laurel and Hardy.
Here's
Abbott
the problem.
And Costello. You like old horror movies or some dumb bullshit, right?
Is that this is clearly the hidden racist coming out because they first, the writer, first thought of Rocco and then immediately was like, what's the word, what's the name that rhymes Paco with Rocco? Oh, Paco, I'm going to make this guy Hispanic. Like, this wasn't a, I'm going to call him Paco and then we're going to name the white guy Rocco. Ha, ha, ha. It was like, what's the first thing that'll rhyme with Rocco? Chris is called Paco. Guess I know what that means. So there was that.
Thanks, Obama.
So then they go through and...
That's how I feel about all this. It's exactly that. It's like, just throw some blanket generalization over some other guys while you're at it. That'd be cool.
Then we get to the Mormon chapter.
Can I talk about the Mormon chapter?
Please talk about Mormon chapter.
At this point, Albert starts. First of all, he starts reciting Bible verses, and I'm just like, "Is this going to be over soon?" This is the point at the book where I'm done, and I'm pushing myself to read it. Going, I want this to be finished.
When they talk about sex again?
Oh, he's so insufferable. Oh, sex is so bad. I'm a sinner, boy. Maybe Arlene will marry me and we can have sex because we've known each other a week. But don't worry about it. Oh, man, I'm hot for this lady. But I'm such a bad, naughty boy that I can't ever do it with her. Don't worry about it. I feel like he wants her to tell her he's a bad Mormon boy.
Oh, yeah, he probably really likes it.
Tell me
you
I'm
know
bad.
What? And
tell
maybe if bad, he came Arlene. Out and he was like, really sort of into this idea.
Arlene, you slut.
Yeah, she says that. She's like, at one point, she was like, I don't want him to just think I'm some marine slut.
Hey, Albert's like a wet blanket. He's like, no, we can't do it. Wait, we're not married. Sin is it's a sin in the mind and in the body.
You mean we can't even fool around, she asked? I mean, we can't have sex together until we're
no
married.
No touching.
You're kidding, she said. Not even touching? Not sexual touching. I wish she'd let up. I wish she'd just let off me, man. Just let up. No sexual
no
touching
bad
allowed.
Touching. No touching.
No bad touches
oh,
allowed.
Oh, don't touch me.
None.
No,
that's
me.
Not a, like, that's a big no. It's a
Arlene,
circle with a line through.
Arlene, if you try to touch me in any way that's not just a friendly touch, it's fornication.
Don't
we're
do
not
it.
Married. Man and woman can't touch. Mormons say we can't. God says we can't. Jesus said, don't touch me in my pee-pee place.
Don't do it. Beep! Don't do it. That's the bad touch alarm going off.
No sexual touching.
No sexual touching.
God, it's just so dumb. It's like
thank
a three-year-old talking
he gets
about
a fireball
his
to his face later. Really, like, come on, man. Look, I'm not. I think if I argue too hard about Albert being a wet blanket, right, then I'm just gonna come across like a chauvinistic asshole. But the truth is, he's just not realistic. Like, this isn't the way. Like no one. No one, and if you do go through life like this, let's find a solution. Like, he is one of these characters who is typically religious to a fault.
He's so,
as though,
what's the word that I'm looking for, dude? Repressed. He's
yes.
repressed
and,
so
and
sexually.
In that he's not even a well-designed character. His sexual repression through religion is the only thing about his character that's meant to like define him. These are all one layer characters. None of them change. They're not dynamic at all, right? They don't learn new things or go through any big essential like crises or change. They're always the same idiots. Even after they get a bunch of people killed, Arlene has this huge argument with Jill at one point where Jill like makes noise and almost gets them found out. And she's like, you're an idiot. You owe us by the end of this mission. You're going to pay that back. I'm like,
you killed
got
all
a whole
my
bunch
friends.
Of people killed, man. Like, and you know what? If it was subtle enough in its writing to be like, oh, the reason that Arlene is so pissed off at Jill is actually that she's pissed off at herself. You can subtly suggest that with clever writing,
hey,
but it's
don't
not
do that.
There.
They don't know. No, that's not in this book. There's nothing subtle or clever about this tripe. Don't worry about it. Hey, guess what, Rance? I got to prove you wrong on something.
What's that?
Jill's last name is not Lovelace.
It is.
No. It's
yes,
Hirschner.
It's Hirschner, right? But she goes by... Dude, just wait.
She said her last name. She said, or my name's not Jill Hirschner.
Just wait. Just telling you to wait.
Screw me, man. I don't. Look, just they blow up the lab. We all get out of here.
Yep. But I'd really like to ask this, though, really quick, about Albert and Arlene. Because every time Albert and Arlene are together, they're talking about sex.
They're insufferable.
Glory holes? Sexual touching? Can we, like, fool around? Like, just over the clothes, right? Just, like...
Can you just, like, make out a little bit? Like, a little bit of make out sesh?
I need to ask you a question, she said. Ask away. Do you love someone? It's a very personal question. That's why I'm asking, she followed up. Do you? She deserved an answer. Yes, but she's dead. You never made love to her? She died before we married. That's the question? When somebody says, yes, I loved someone, but she's dead, you don't just return with...
You never banged her?
You guys never did the... That wasn't a thing you did? Like,
you didn't score, bro? Dude, you didn't get it in?
Dude,
you didn't slip her the salami injection?
You didn't smash?
Dude, you didn't slap that hard pepperoni against those meat curtains?
Did you crash and bash? Did you roll it into that ham wallet? Did you use it like a human glory hole?
Yo, did you show her how bowling balls work?
Is it front or... Did you guys do a little DP? Did you do a little LDDP?
Bro, did you get your willy wet at all? This is the important questions I need to know as a possible sexual partner for you. Because I'm not talking about getting married. I'm talking about having a little fun. My name's Arlene A.S. Sanders. The A.S. stands for ass stuff. Because that's what this book is. It's just these two asshats going, oh man, I'm so hot for this girl that I made up in my head.
I'm feeling really upset, though, that I just made a hot joke.
Which one?
You just rolled right over.
Which one? I'm sorry.
A little bit of LDDP.
LDDP. I don't.
Latter-day Saints. LDDP.
I forgot that she refers to them as LDs.
It's LDs, right?
I'm sorry.
The Latter-day Saints.
I'm sorry, man.
A little bit.
There's only so many things I can think about based on this book. It's not a lot of them. Look at my notes. My entire notes for chapter 31 are... After running from the demons in the sewers and luck saving them again, we're finally getting close to the end of this book.
Thank God. And you know what's great about that?
Oh, you know how they kill the demons? They kill the demons after they get out of there. It's a methane explosion.
Yeah.
In the sewers. That's what we were talking about during the recap.
They don't even... We find out the only important, truly only important thing that happens at this point is that this book sets up further world building. For later. Like, we find out why the demons are there.
We find out that Albert can hotwire a car.
Oh, yeah. Oh, He's got a past. He's got a past. He might not glory hole, but he certainly will wire a car.
He was not a Mormon. Wait, was he a Mormon before he went into the Marines?
I would presume so.
Okay, that's fine. Then that settles that. I didn't know if he was a Mormon.
Maybe? I don't know.
Everybody's like, oh. The Mormons saved him from his soul from the demons, because John was the demons, Albert was the demons.
So he gets face blasted with a pinky ball. Thank goodness for that.
Oh man, but it doesn't do enough. It doesn't kill him. Unfortunately. Yeah.
No, because you have to have him there for the next book.
We're gonna be stuck dealing with this idiot for two more books.
There is no climax to this book. There is no ultimate conclusion. There is no final confrontation. If you expected, as a Doom fan, to see the icon of sin, which is right behind you right now, and you would have to hear it say, "To beat the game, you have to shoot me, John Romero." Like, that's what it would say in backwards in the original Doom, right?
Right.
Because John Romero's head was behind the brain. Like, there's no icon of sin. It's right there. You have to do. It's the crappiest. It's not until I've become an adult, truly become an adult, and I realize what makes a good game and what doesn't, that I realize how bad some parts of these old games were. Like that part where you have to like fall off of a big pillar and just shoot one rocket at the right time. Stupid.
And nowadays will probably be like you look at it and go, "Oh man, that's so dumb."
It's the equivalent of, you remember in Batman Arkham Asylum? The whole game is so great, right?
Yeah.
The whole game is so good, so atmospheric. Every boss fight is super fun and unique and cool and new. And then you get to the end, and what do you fight?
A
Muscle Joker.
A brute, yeah.
You fight Muscle Joker. The Joker, the most brilliant bad guy in the Batman universe. He gets, like, doesn't he get some of Bane's serum?
Yes.
Like, the virus, serum?
It's not venom toxin. It's something else that's, like, modified. But it's what Bane takes, but it's modified. So
right.
You can do a single shot of it or something.
So it's, like, they just create an excuse. So that's what the Icon of Sin was. But that's not even this book. There's no final confrontation. There's no, they don't fight something bigger than a cyber demon. There is no big group of enemies to fight. They just cut a wire.
It's almost like it's an exact retread of the previous book's ending. The new party member that they have gets shot in the face. So what do they got to do? They got to abandon him. And now they beat the game and then they're trapped.
Ways that this book is just like the first one, okay? Friend gets blasted by spiny fire, right?
Yeah.
They find what is basically someone who has been rendered an invalid that is the key to the solution, right? Ken in this, they have to hack into his brain to figure out that, like, he can control the demons or whatever. And the last one was Bill Rich, who also is the one who gets flamed, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then they get stuck in an unescapable situation, and Arlene's like, I got it.
I know what it is. Don't worry about it, I'm Arlene.
Are you ready to take the quiz? Because I'm ready to be done with this garbage.
Yeah. I am ready.
What are some of your final thoughts on this book, though, before we jump into this fun stuff or what I think is fun stuff? Like, what are just, like, final honest-to-goodness thoughts about it going forward?
I've never read a book where characters were so weirdly sexually repressed and that the author's sexual hang-ups become such a part of the book that it's that much of a problem. It's unbearably bad to deal with and to read it, and that it's pervasive.
Yeah.
It's so pervasive.
I didn't enjoy it at all. I did enjoy Doom 2 more than I did Knee Deep in the Dead, I think. Because at least there's other... I hesitate to call them characters. Like, there's other pieces of cardboard that create language that you can bounce things off of. I was remarkably bothered, however, by rereading this now, how much strange, like, Hitler-esque apologism, though, is in this book.
There's a lot of references. Actually, I do say at one point that there's references to the Holocaust with the trains and things like that I feel evoke things emotionally that are, it's like cheating.
This
book is so bad that they shouldn't be allowed to mentally refer to those types of situations because it's insulting.
And they also do so in a way that is really really problematic. So they talk, they dance a lot into, I'm sorry, I'm looking down, I'm trying to find where I specifically put it. They dance a lot in a lot of these situations where they're trying to explore philosophy, like human perseverance and all this kind of stuff that, like, other authors could nail, but these guys just absolutely can't. Jill suddenly surprised me by turning around and facing Albert and asking, "Are you saying the monsters are a judgment of God against the human race?" "No," he said. "I think this is a testing." Arlene had promised not to talk religion with the boss. Now the circumstances had changed. Albert was a comrade. She'd talk about anything to a comrade. "Would you say that what the Nazis did to the Jews was a testing?" she asked angrily. "The most important lesson from what Hitler did to the Jews," he said calmly, "was that at the end of the war, they were still in the world. I'd call that a testing, one they passed by surviving when the Thousand-Year Reich was destroyed. If they'd been destroyed, it would have been a judgment." So we get this guy, this idiot, who is literally like, "Well, of course we can just say that what happened to the Jews was that the Holocaust was just a test.
Yo's.
And they survived. That's the most important thing. That's what we got to bring away from it. It was just a test.
Don't worry about it. One of the most.
And if they had all died, it would have been a judgment.
One of the most society, world-changing slaughters, one of the most horrible things that one group of humans has ever done to another. It was just a little test.
Well, and then later, they then make the other argument. What's disgusting. The other argument? What's the argument that you hear people who are always apologizing or always making excuses for Nazi soldiers? What is the one thing they always say?
They had to.
Right.
They had to. They were worried about their families. So, they were worried about what would happen to them. They were coerced into it. If they didn't do it, it's called having morals. It's called having a conscience. It's called being a human being, understanding the actions of what you're doing. And yes, I can imagine being scared. But damn.
Well, later on they touch upon that, right? That they talk this Clyde situation. They're like, was that a genetic creation? Was it a human that was brought into service? What is happening? And then the comment is brought up that they're like, well, you know, maybe it's sort of like, you know, sort of like some of the soldiers in the Nazi army, right? Like maybe they, you know, they didn't have a choice. And this is why I like Jill, is because Jill says, you know what?
I'd kill him again.
Kill him anyway. And I'm like, hell yeah. Like, yeah. Jill, you might not be a good character. At least the kid is 14. That's punk. Like, that's brutal. She's like, yeah, just end him.
Punch
like,
him
to hell
in the
with
face.
The traitor. Kill traitors. Traitors are done, right? Awesome. Beat up. Like, cool. But everybody else is like, I don't know, man. There might be some, like, human moral, like, we would have to have a conscience about it. No, be done with it, man. That's just done. No. Nazis suck. Demons suck. Daffy Hughes sucks. Brad Linweaver sucked. And you know what?
Is it that I can
I heard he passed away.
I want to take this Kahoot, bro.
Please take this Kahoot, because I'm done with this garbage book.
Okay,
I'm so
man.
Glad I'm finished it, and I can't wait to dive into the third one. Okay, so this Kahoot is just for you, buddy. I'm going to need you to share your screen.
Doing it right
this
now?
Just for you. Yep.
You ready for this?
I am. I really want you to pay attention to some of the pictures, though, in this one.
Okay. Is this guy here, is that Vin Diesel in... is that Vin Diesel in Riddick? No, he doesn't have any glasses.
It's not.
Is it
that,
one of the guys from Rammstein?
Nope. Bob, that is this guy I always thought was Flint Eggert. That is, if you look up later on, I'm going to need you to look up a video for the Doom for SNES commercial that aired in 1993.
Okay, cool.
And it's a 15-second long commercial, and there is a guy in it, and that's
wow.
Him.
It's got my old name saved, by the way.
It does.
And
I thought this guy was Fly Taggart. He's like this sort of spindly dude with a scar on his cheek, and that is who I saw whenever I read this book.
Nice. I'm Jill No Name.
Okay, thank you.
We're gonna take a quiz.
Take this quiz.
E2, M2, this is for Bob.
All right, here you go.
The all-in style of acting that the gang has to adopt to pass through zombie hordes can be best attributed to Bertolt Brecht, Konstantin Stanislavski, Thornton Wilder, or Charlie Chaplin? Well, everybody knows that we're talking about Stanislavski's method. So it's Konstantin Stanislavski. Is that why we have The Rock here? A picture of Dwayne The Rock Johnson because he's a method actor?
He is a method actor.
He's all in.
He is so all in. Right? Yeah, what do they have to do to get past him? They have to use the lemons,
act.
Right? And act like zombies.
Which is, as I've said, they actually... It's a little bit like Walking Dead, but it's more like Shaun of the Dead, which I know this was out before Shaun of the Dead, but
yes.
Shaun of the Dead took that concept and did it better.
Yep. Way better. What, you can just get past zombies by rubbing rotten lemons on your body?
Yeah, clearly. Oh, man, it's covering up my notes. I don't know what my score is.
You're fine. You got 1,000. I got your back on the scores.
Okay, cool. I wonder if I can move this. Oh, I can move it. Cool.
Cool, do it.
It's freaking out. I don't know if it's going to show it in the recording, but
better go.
Who cares? Next. Arlene is basically MacGyver, so she'd be the ideal for what career in theater? Stage manager, costuming, leading lady, or tech and design? I'm going to go ahead and say tech and design.
That's
right. All right. Giving me all the credit. Don't give stage managers any credit, because guess what? Stage managers.
She'll fix anything. Did you see the picture?
It was the Scorpion King. This is The Rock as the Scorpion King.
Yes.
So are all of these going to be The Rock?
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, wait. I know there's a theme now. I know what the theme is already. At the end of this book, Albert does his best unintentional impression of what prophet in Greek tragedy is. Tiresias, Bacchus, Dionysus, Chlamydius. Well, Bacchus is actually the same person as Dionysus, I believe. Like, Dionysus held bacchanals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Chlamydius is clearly, as in chlamydia. I'm going to say Tiresias. I can't quite remember, but I'm sure, I think Tiresias was a prophet.
He was. Do you remember why?
Was he the prophet in, hold on. The one where the guy gouges his own dang eyes out.
No, he's not. He's not. But you're on the move.
Oedipus.
Yes,
I was thinking.
Yeah, Tiresias is the blind prophet.
Okay. All
right. Right? Because Albert gets blinded by this piney shot.
He sure does.
Just like The Rock in this picture is blind to just how awkward this picture really is.
Oh, man.
He's probably a little Fly and Jill action there, you know?
It's cool. I'm about it. Next. Flies. God dang it. Flies reflection. Sleep that knits up the raveled sleeve of care is a poorly placed reference to which play? Man, I hate Shakespeare. So I have avoided studying any Shakespeare.
You want me to give you some hints?
Nope. Sleeve that knits up the raveled sleeve of care. Hamlet, Much Ado About Nothing, Macbeth, or Romeo and Juliet. Sleep that knits up the raveled sleeve. I'm going to say Hamlet because he is not emotionally and mentally well during that show. Neither is Macbeth. But I feel like Hamlet is a person who loses sleep and that he's sort of like, if I fall asleep, then it's going to take the edge away.
Gotcha.
Nope.
You're an idiot.
Who was it?
Oh, Macbeth. Macbeth, he murders sleep, man. Macbeth murders sleep, right? That's what he says. He says, I murdered sleep. Why? Because I've done a terrible thing. I killed the king. I've murdered my ability to be calm and to have sleep. Which is why when Fly Taggart just references this in his head, what the why? This is a guy who doesn't even know, like, who...
That's because these guys don't have any ability to have any comprehensive voice for a character. They're all them. They're
Fly
all just them.
Fly is not gonna dump Macbeth into
next.
This. Not to mention it was totally out of nowhere.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. I screwed up.
That's okay. It's okay.
This shot from Doom, the movie, is a direct reference to what other more successfully cheesy horror film? The Thing, A Clockwork Orange, High Tension, or Evil Dead 2?
Now, obviously, people can't see that picture. Like,
no, it is definitely
YouTube, right?
The Rock looking like he's wearing some Buffy-style vampire stuff. But I'm going to go ahead and say it's one of two. It's either The Thing or Evil Dead 2, but I'm going to guess that it's Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
Mostly because I just love Evil Dead.
You know exactly what scene it is, though, that it's referencing, right?
No, because I'm not... It's the one where Ash turns into a demon.
Yeah, it's the close-up of his face when he's going when he's going mad.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Then he's laughing, and he turns and looks at the camera, and he's laughing.
This movie with The Rock is so bad. It's only good except for... But, hey, don't worry about it. We talked about that last time. Cody told us about it. He told us about that a different spices was coming to give us an extra chromosome.
Different spices are coming to give us an extra chromosome.
I completed this. I did a good cahoot.
You did a pretty good job, man. You did a pretty good. I'm really disappointed you didn't know Macbeth. You know,
sorry, man.
Okay. So as
I
far
don't
as
like
boy,
Shakespeare as a theater boy, I've always said to people, don't like Shakespeare, and when people tell me they like Shakespeare, I get mad at them.
I don't like it because it gets shoved
through our mouth, into our mouth, through all of high school, and when you go to college for theater, they're like, hey, guess what? Study Shakespeare for 4 more years, you dingus. No, I just want to build sets. I don't care. If I do Shakespeare when I'm out there, then I'll read it. Good for me. Stop making me study it. It's dumb. It's not good. It's not that good. It's not good.
Do it.
It's as good as this. I would argue that Shakespeare is that time period's equivalent to these books.
Whoa.
Actors were trash. Nobody liked them. They were considered hacks, and it was garbage. Just like this is garbage.
Whoa, man.
You know why Shakespeare's still famous now? Because he was a white dude who had good advertising.
Hey, I just want to ask you really quick. As far as theater boy tests go, would you give it a 1 to 10? How was it?
I would give it a 7.5 Lady Macbeths out of 10 bloody hands.
Thank you. It was really hard to pull a theater boy test out of this whole thing, but yeah, I tried real hard.
I appreciate it. I appreciate what you did for me.
I tried real hard.
I love you, bud. I love you, bro. Thanks.
I love you, too. But definitely not with the aggressive gay way. Some of that aggressive gay theater stuff. It's me winking at you. Well, I feel like that leaves us with just one more thing to do.
Reviews?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm pulling them up right now.
I'm so glad.
So I'm going to start this week, the reviews this week, by I wish that in other books that we did, this guy wrote reviews, because I'm really, really about R2-D2's reviews.
Yeah, R2-D2 was he was really on point, you know?
He was. He knew exactly what these books were about and how awesome they are. Can you hear the hamster behind me?
I can.
Yeah, no, he's just right behind me.
That's cool.
Biting on his cage, coming right through the icon of sin.
I don't see him.
No, it's because he's behind the green
screen. So if I shoot a rocket through the icon of sin, will it hit the... Oh, check him out. I shoot a rocket through the icon of sin, and I'm going to hit him, and I don't want to do that.
And you hit Casey the hamster.
Man, that sucks. I don't want to do
Casey,
that.
Casey, I'm going to need you to stop, though, bro.
He's fine. With killing it. You know me. What? He's
just listen to this hot background noise. All right, R2-D2, tell me about Hell on Earth. Wait for this. Do you hear the cool noise in the background?
I just want everybody to
listen and enjoy it.
That's
Casey just chewing on his cage.
Casey knows what to do. Man,
Hell
he
on
never
Earth.
Has to read this book.
Hell on Earth is a great sequel to a very addictive series by reviewer R2-D2, reviewed in the United States November 29th, 2014. Continuing where Knee-Deep in the Dead stops, we find our two favorite demon-slaying, zombie-splodin' action heroes faced with the reality that Earth has been invaded. The story that unfolds on planet Earth is one that could never be guessed and packs a particular charm that I have never seen in this sci-fi slash horror story. Our protagonists travel Salt Lake City. There are fascinating reasons as to why it has survived the apocalypse. Fascinating. With two members, one a wayward Mormon, Albert, and the other a 14-year-old hacker, Jill. Make sure your seatbelt is fastened for the highway madness, eerily crafted train ride, and worst of all, a demon control Los Angeles. And that is not plural. It is just not
demon control Los Angeles.
It's just a demon control Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Much of what I wrote in the review for Knee Deep in the Dead can be applied to this novel as well. Yet we are given much more character complexity as Arlene struggles with her atheism in a time when demons or aliens are reality. And Fly, who swears off love until the world is no longer at its end. But sometimes the heart gets in the way of the head. Hell on Earth is a great sequel to a very addictive series. 4 out of 5 stars.
You know, I feel like R2-D2, if he was given the rights and the opportunity to write these books, would have actually done a far better job.
Clearly.
Than Daffy DePew and Bradlin Weaver, RIP. I feel like his use of language, his willingness to understand exactly how to write in a way that will engage and draw your reader in is spectacular. I would not buy this book based on his review. It's bullshit. However, 4 out of 5, pretty convincing. He did use the word wayward. He did talk about zombie exploders. I feel like R2-D2... he's got a bright career as an Amazon reviewer. When was that review written?
2014.
Cool. So that was definitely at a time where phrases like that aggressive gay stuff would still not be cool. So no. I know exactly who R2-D2 is. Yeah. Okay.
So our next one, you get to guess. Okay. This is Guess the Stars.
This is my favorite.
This has got to be the longest Amazon review I have ever read.
You're going to read the whole
thing? So I'm sorry. I am going to try to stomach my way through the whole damn review.
Okay.
But I need you to know that this was reviewed in the United States on September 13, 2019.
So this is new review.
This is new. This is okay. Last year.
Oh, man, I can't wait.
A serious step down, saved by a good ending. Just let it sink in. I recently reread Doom, Knee Deep in the Dead, the first book in this series, and loved it just as much as I loved it when I read it as a bright-eyed teenager. I'd never gotten around to reading the second book in this series in this book. I'd never gotten around to reading the second book in this series. This book, Hell on Earth, which is a very, very loose adaptation of the video game Doom 2, Hell on Earth.
If he thinks this book sucks, he's going to hate 3 and 4, man.
So a few months ago, I bought all four books on Kindle and decided I was going to read them all, once and for all. So now I've made my way through Hell on Earth, and I'm disappointed, yet still intrigued as to where the whole series goes. First of all, this book's main problem is that it keeps shifting from first-person narratives. It goes from Fly's point of view, to Arlene's point of view, back to Fly's point of view. Then the new characters are introduced, and soon we start shifting into their points of view, too. In total, there's four characters you have to get to know from a first-person perspective.
Oh, it's such a hard job!
Which is asking a lot, at least I think it is. I understand the purpose behind this style. The book wouldn't make much sense if they didn't do it, but it's very jarring shift perspectives in this way, and it was detrimental to my enjoyment of the novel. Either way, the story as a whole wouldn't work if they didn't do this, so I don't know if it's bad writing on the author's part or if it's my fault for not being able to get used to the shifting first-person perspectives. So I'm not really sure what's going on there, but no, sir, I don't like it. You have your hand up.
Answer, yes. One, it's bad writing. Two, I mean, it's bad writing not because of the shifting perspectives, because it's Daffy DePew and Brad
Lindley. But two, it's also your fault.
But two, it's also your fault because you're an idiot who can't follow four different characters looking at the same. This guy must have a hellacious time watching something like The Walking Dead, also RIP. Like, this guy has a hard time understanding the plot inconsistencies present in Pong. I mean, this is not works for brilliant minds.
Second, the story isn't very good. Sure, it introduces the new monster from the video game, too, but doesn't bring a whole hell of a lot else to the table.
The new monster.
See what he did there?
The one new monster?
No, introduces the new monsters from the video game, dude, too, but doesn't bring a whole hell of a lot else to the table. I found the two new main characters, Albert and Jill, to be kind of unlikable and didn't appreciate them as much as I think the author intended me to.
Well, in that regard, very accurate, very accurate.
There's a lot of interesting stuff in here about the Mormons being survivalists, the day-to-day routines of zombies and the cyberpunk hacking, but it's all bogged down by the book's middle part, which, as I recall, takes place mostly on some sort of train heading towards Los Angeles. This part of the book is not at all well written, and I had trouble understanding what was being described to me. Then suddenly, without warning, the characters are no longer on the train, and I'm not sure how it happened. Again, it might be my fault, my ADHD kicking in or something, but I think a lot of this book is either poorly written or it went way over my head, which is odd considering I'm a 31-year-old man and this book is written for a young adult audience of 13 to 19 in mind.
Interestingly enough, I love it. This is why readers suck. Because this guy, every time that he's mentioned something that is potentially a problem with the novel or the writing, he's also gone,
could just be me.
I mean, it could have been me, and maybe so the fact that I'm writing a bad review of your book, like, it's actually just me, right?
Could just be me, man. Like, let's just make a stand, bro. Just pick something. Is it bad or is it good? Do you not like it? If you don't like it, it's okay to not like it.
Know yourself well enough as a reader to be like, well, okay, maybe my ADD just kicked in, so I gotta go back and reread a part to figure out what happened.
All right, we're closing.
Says the guy who didn't, really reread anything. But you know what? This is the second time I've read this book. I've exposed myself to this bullshit twice in my life.
Just here, you'll understand how well this dude really got the book.
Cool.
By just the next couple of, like the last page. Anyway, cool. Page. Anyway, I managed to choke through the book, and the ending is pretty good. I don't want to give too much away, but the ending takes place at Disneyland. That's not really a spoiler. It's just where the ending takes place, and I enjoyed the end. In all honesty, I started reading this book about 3 months ago, and I had to put it down several extended periods of time in between sittings because I just didn't like it very much, which is a shame because I really enjoyed the first one a lot. But if you're reading this review, you're wondering whether to buy it or not, probably based on the fact that you read the first one, because why else would you be on the Amazon page of book two of a series of four? And the answer is a yes with a question mark. Yes, you really should read this book if you're really, really curious about what happens to Fly and Arlene after Knee Deep in the Dead. But only if you can handle the constantly shifting narrative and, frankly, what I found to be unlikable new characters. That's just my two cents. Don't let me stop you from buying the book. Like I said, it's aimed at a much younger audience than my age group. There's hardly any swearing, and the descriptions of violence are cartoonish at best. Think of Itchy and Scratchy from The Simpsons. And to top it all off, it's based on a video game that's been out for over 25 years, albeit very loosely. So that's my review. Check it out, but only if you're dead set on finding what happens after the events of Knee Deep in the Dead, which, if you're being honest, I wasn't for many years after reading the first book in the series for the first time. Man, can you repeat over and over again for me?
If I'm being honest.
If I'm being honest, bro, it could just be me.
If I'm being honest, could have just been me.
Oh, man, I didn't like
this.
Could
have been my medical problems that made me.
Don't worry about Itchy and Scratchy. Could be this for babies, and I'm an adult.
Just book for babies. I don't need it. I'm not going to read this whole book. I'm already over 3 months.
If you're
definitely
really...
I'm definitely going to have a reliable output outlook on this book.
I kept putting it down. Kept putting it down.
I couldn't pick it back up.
Look, if you're looking for a book that's part two of a four-book series, this is the book for you.
This guy's going to hate the next two. He's going to hate them.
For other reviews, if he even got there. I mean, if it took him 20 years to read the second book in
and
the
then
series.
3 months to get... I'm going to be dead by the time this guy reads the last book. Thank God.
I got to know, man. Got to know. How many stars did Corey Bronner give it?
Well, Corey... Here's the thing. I know it's your opinion.
It's just my opinion, man.
I want to go with a hard three, right? I want to go with a hard three. But here's the other problem, is that Corey clearly has a literary hard-on for the first book, even after all these years.
He loves it.
So I feel like Corey's aware enough to know that his own issues aren't a good enough reason to dock a book down, even if it's already a bad book, which it is. I'm not giving Defeated Pugh and Brad Lindenweaver, RIP, a pass here. I'm literally just saying that, like, I feel bad that a writer gets this idiot as the reviewer because they're clearly not even honest with themselves, so they can be honest about a book, even though I'm being honest with you. I want to say a three because it's about a three review. But because we clearly know that nobody knows how to use the fucking rating system the proper way, even when they write. Because what are you going to do? You're going to write something that's appropriately 3 stars or 2 stars? No, you're going to end up being an idiot and slip your finger onto the 4 or 5 stars after you write a scathing review. So I'm going to say, even hesitantly, I'm going to say 4. And I'm going to regret it.
You should go with your instincts, bro.
3?
It's a 3-star review.
Damn, he didn't mess it up?
I mean, no, that might just be him, though. He might just barely know how to press buttons.
I mean, his name is Corey Bronnen, so.
Man, dude. Congratulations to us and to everyone out there that read this book with us. You deserve a big round of applause.
Yep.
Because holy crap, we made it through. We made it through book two. Now, granted, we're not through the whole series. There's a lot of work left to be done. But we've got a surprise and a reward for everyone.
Oh, God. Thank God for that. Is that we get to burn ourselves live on... on Zoom, and we get to douse ourselves in gasoline, light ourselves and these books on fire.
Just pour this on my head. Oh, wait, that wouldn't work. It's just not enough alcohol in this to, like,
it's just fruit.
Kill a fly. Next week's book is not Doom Book 3. We're going to take a book break. Going to let you all take a deep breath and go... holy crap, that was bad. Let's read something that's maybe not so bad, but a little bit weird. So, next week's book, we're going to read Alan Dean Foster's Star Wars, Splinters of the Mind's Eye. Splinter of the Mind's Eye. Sorry, I can't even say the dang title right.
I told you it was problematic.
My brain's fried. My brain is fried after that Doom trash. So this book itself is the first piece of Star Wars non-canon fiction that was written ever. Alan Dean Foster is the guy who's written a lot, if not all, of the Star Wars novelizations of the movies. And so after the novelization of the first film was done, before Empire Strikes Back came out, he wrote a sequel. And that sequel does a lot of weird things that aren't in canon in the universe anymore. It's like the first piece of Legends fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's almost like twice non-canon, because as soon as Empire Strikes Back came out, they're like,
it rendered all of it.
Yeah. This isn't real. This is what? But then they went, okay, well, it still exists out there in the Legends, almost like an alternate universe thing. And now they're like, oh, that's so not right. But it does things like it uses the term. I know one of the big terms in there is the Kyber crystal, which apparently is like this big force crystal. I don't understand it because I haven't read it yet, but it's got a lot of weird stuff. Like,
wait, you don't know what Kyber crystals do?
No, I know what Kyber crystals do, but in this book, the Kyber crystal is not the same thing as the lightsaber crystal.
Okay. For a minute, I was like, whoa, because we talked earlier about how you're going to have to, like, so I know Star Wars, right? Yeah, but I also am not as versed on some of the side stuff.
This is one of the things that's going to be fun. It's because we're going to be in there talking about stuff, and I'm going to go, no, Rance, that's actually not what really Star Wars is. And Rance is going to get so confused because he's going to be like, dude, I never knew this about Star Wars. And I'm going to be like, that's because it's not canon, bro. It doesn't
exist. They put that whole Kyber crystal inside of their lightsabers?
Also, we feel like maybe our pace might be a little bit fast for some people trying to read and catch up, like keep along. So for next week, we're going to only go the first 100 pages of this book. It's about a 300-page book. So depending on what happens, we're going to go into next week, get some of our fun background on Alan Dean Foster and other things surrounding the book, and do the first 100 pages of it. I think this is going to be a lot more fun because it's a weird anomaly in
Star Wars.
What's
the name
of
the book
universe.
Again?
Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
So when you sent me that, you were like, hey, this is the book I think we should read, right? Because so Bob and I, we go back and forth and talk about like what books you want to read next. When he sent it to me, my eyes immediately read Sphincter of the Mind's Eye. Like, I had absolutely no doubt that what I saw was a book called Sphincter of the Mind's Eye. I was like, what the hell is this? And then I saw it Splinter. I was like, okay, cool. So I'm looking forward to reading Sphincter of the Mind's Eye.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And while you're at it,
I think it'll be nice.
It is. It's going to be a nice change of pace.
Alan Dean Foster is so I have read stuff by him.
Me too.
In the past.
Me too.
I think most of us, if you've read science fiction or fantasy in some regard over the past like 35 years, you've probably read a book by him and not even realized it because he's written so much stuff. Including the one that I honestly can't wait to for my own personal reading pleasure to get to later is the Alien Nation novelization of the movie, or I don't even know.
I don't know. We'll find out.
But he wrote a book set with Sykes and what's his name?
Sam Francisco. All right, everybody. If you'd like to email us, check out our website at www.thequarantinebookclub.com. You can find us on any podcast service like Apple, Spotify, you know, any of those great portals. Give us a rate and review because it really helps us out. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the like and subscribe
like
bell
that
icon.
Page, I like that page change you just did there. Let me just take this thing and
Hit us up on Facebook at thequarantinebookclub.com and on Instagram at the Quarantine Book Club Podcast. Finally, check out our links below for the music for this episode. There's we're gonna link Decino, is that the guy's name?
Yeah.
Who does the videos about Doom, and AnnieMiles.com for that great shirt that Rance got at the beginning of the episode.
I like my shirt.
All right, everybody, so we're going to kick into some Star Wars over the next couple of weeks. We'll come back to the Doom series if you're really, really, really itching for
Oh, you will be. Because, no, we have to. Well, no. We have to get
to
three.
No, we'll be back. We'll go to three.
I can't wait to get into some of that weird shit.
There is some weird sci-fi
There's
stuff.
Some weird shit that goes on in 3 and 4.
We keep saying it gets better. It never gets better.
No, it never gets better. It just gets way more trippy. And also, I think they might have taken a lot of LSD.
A lot. hey, I just wanted to let you know, bro, that I think you're a hippie punk snot.
Hey, man, you know, when I think of you, I'm just crazy, bugging, retarded, and I can't wait. I can't wait to be aggressively gay with you.
Nice.
Good to see you, Paco.
See
and,
ya.
Rocco. I will. All right. Catch you soon. Be well. Read it up. Read it up.
I love you guys. I'm so glad that we're done that trash.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking.
Is that
a Seagram's? I'm drinking a Seagram's.
Wait, is that a fruit punch, or is that an actual drink?
It's a lemon, strawberry, watermelon, guava. I mean, it's an alcoholic drink.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
It's a fruit soda with alcohol in it, basically. I love beer, don't get me wrong, but I have, during quarantine, been drinking a lot of beer, and some days I just kind of go, hey, I want a thing that does not taste like beer.
Yep. Why do you think I've got two beers here with me tonight rather than just one for a 1 hour podcast?
Tolerance has shot through the roof.
Me too.
And I don't feel anything anymore because I've been drinking so much.
During
this quarantine.
We haven't become alcoholics, though, okay? We haven't
gotten that far yet,
so please don't send help.
Because I have days where I don't drink at all.
Right. Right.
It's just when I do decide to drink, I'm drinking more.